All right. So, well, I'll first acknowledge, obviously, Paul Funk was supposed to give this, and I'm not Paul Funk. He's not working, obviously. Albert Terrazas is a student there at New Mexico State who's worked with Paul to analyze a lot of the dryer fuel data. And Kathy Yater is the statistician in the Plains area. Also want to thank, there's a picture in here of all the gins we've been to. Want to thank all our cooperating ginners that let us into their gins to collect all this data. Probably most of the ones in this room, we've been in their gins. So, of course, we know energy is an important cost component in our gins. It's over 25% of the variable cost of ginning. The surveys that are regularly done that Tommy Valco had been the one responsible for, and I guess now it'll be Greg. But electricity cost, we see that from, anywhere from $2 to $10 a bale. Fuel costs tend to be much more variable, of course, because of the weather. And also our gin design affects that. With that huge range in energy cost and fuel costs, there's definitely some opportunities for savings. So this work has been ongoing for a long time. We started looking at electricity, realized we really need to look into the dryer fuel aspect as well. And again, this is the map, and we want to thank all these cooperating gins. We've been all over the Cotton Belt. As you can see, we've been in most of the cotton growing states. So we think we have a good cross-section here. We have found that we have reduced our energy use, and Tommy's surveys show this as well. Everything's been mechanized. There was a lot more in 1962 where you see that. One, the bales weren't universal density. We used more energy there. But it's just we've become much more efficient in our gins. And also it's an important point, the air quality regulations. We now have cyclones on all our exhaust, and there's an energy cost to that. But we've still managed to reduce our total energy footprint, even though we've had to install the cyclones. So like I said, some of this we generally take a one-time measurement just to get a lot of data quickly, and then we did some more longer-term monitoring where we can really show what happens throughout the course of a season in the gin. Paul is the photographer, so you'll see more of me in the pictures than him. I'm not that. That's my wife's job. So monitoring electricity. Obviously the motor control center is shut off there. We made sure we operated safely, but we're measuring it for the entire gin and as well as individual motors. So one thing we found is that our gins have done things to be more efficient. And when we're talking about our gin stand operating efficiency here, this is the percent of time that it's running and has cotton in it. And basically, this is a result of feeding it more efficiently. We have overflow feed controls. We have most gins have a steady flow feed control at the front end that helps meter cotton in. And all this, allows us to keep our gin stands fed. Now we do see, and this is always the case, that last stand is the least efficient. Again, the better controls you have on your material feed, you can minimize that. We do measure power factor, and there's been some concern, and every now and then there's some snake oil salesmen who try and sell gins things they don't need. In most cases, unless your utility charges you for power factor and it's a significant penalty, there's nothing really to do about it. But in monitoring it, we can tell, how well your motors are loaded. An underloaded motor has a lower power factor. And we saw that when we monitored this, it was just under 0.8. And it does say that's a little underloaded, but we have to remember that a big portion of that is due to the bale press, which is only loaded for a very small portion of the cycle. So, but typically we want to see that high power factor on our gin stand motors, which means we're operating them at full load. Again, we want to make sure we're matching our motor size to the load. As you replace motors, generally use high-efficiency motors. We don't operate enough to justify replacement in most circumstances, unless it's just you need a new motor. keep all your systems operating at full capacity. If you've seen this before, matching the equipment sizes, so your gin stands, your bell press, you don't have a bottleneck in your operation. Minimize your downtime. And again, the way to do that is to have a comprehensive maintenance program where you'll have a planned time to do some maintenance, some routine maintenance. Concept of predictive maintenance as well is starting to take hold, and we've seen some gins do this, where you do some monitoring so you know what your life may be on a bearing or a motor, and you can schedule in when you'll need to do a replacement. And again, don't stop or slow down. You know, and that comes to the idea of the preventative and predictive maintenance. If it's necessary to stop for more than 12 minutes, this was kind of the number we came up with in our studies. It will vary from gin to gin just based on your labor cost and your energy use, but that's roughly that 10-minute time frame. And we see a lot of gins do this. They understand where that break-even point is. And, you know, if you're going to be down for more than that, turn everything off, or at least, you know, if you're having to do some drying and don't want your equipment to lose heat, you can leave that burner on pilot and that fan running at low speed. And I got to use that. So again, these are just more pictures of what we did in our electricity audit and some more data here. This kind of shows graphically some of how energy use has changed. As you can see, this shows one of the earliest studies from 1962, then one from the 80s, and then finally now the recent audit studies. Again, one important strategy, and the point of this is really most of our energy use goes to material handling. The fans we're using to move materials in our cotton gins are the biggest consumers of electricity, and so that's really where it's worth focusing much of our attention. Part of this is a centrifugal fan, which we're using in our gin. When they're unloaded, they actually draw more power. There's less resistance, and so there's more airflow. And so we want to really load those fans. We want to be operating at maximum capacity. Also, use the minimum recommended air velocity for pneumatic conveying. And this has kind of led to some more research on this in terms of, you know, how much air do we actually need. The recommendations were just kind of based on rules of thumb and a few tests, but there wasn't much research supporting it. Generally, the lower end of the recommendation is sufficient, what you see in the Cotton Ginner's Handbook, the 3,500 feet per minute. Is sufficient for conveying alone. Again, if you have air leaking out, it's not helping you, it's wasted energy, you know, plug leaks, you know, seal any access doors. And an important place to pay particular attention is on our rotary airlocks, our vacuum droppers, and our separators, the flashings and the flights, make sure those seal properly. This is some work that Paul had done. Basically, it's an Evasse. Notice the accent mark. But basically, it's a way to save a little bit of energy on your cyclone. And so he demonstrated that, you know, it doesn't affect emissions, it saves energy, and it has a pretty quick return on investment. The one issue is it has to be allowed by your permitting authority for that. If you have a fan just moving air, you can use a higher efficiency fan, like a backward curve fan, which we show the blast wheel there. Obviously, if you're handling materials, you're usually using the flat-bladed, you know, abrasion-resistant fans. And there's just some points as we install fans and consider our plant layout. I need a pointer here. I like to point. But the drawing on the right, you'll notice there's a section there on the inlet, a little straight section of pipe, and it doesn't take much. That will help. Basically, you're able to feed more air into the fan more efficiently, so you'll save some energy there. Same concept on the outlet. If you pay close attention to the rotational arrow, that air wants to go opposite on the beyond on my right side, your left side, on the red one, opposite the elbow on the outlet. And so that's going to increase your resistance in the system, and it's less efficient. The green one is the one you should use with the elbow in the direction of rotation. Also, you know, this also shows you use longer radius elbows, you know, the longer inlet into the fan. And this is kind of, you know, we've used this slide before, just, you know, the more efficient scenario. And I know as we add things in our gens, sometimes we get into the situation on the top there where we have lots of elbows and, you know, we kind of have the bird's nest of pipes. But short straight ductwork is going to save energy. There's less frictional loss with shorter runs and fewer elbows. So, another thing, and we've seen some gens do this, is you can replace some of the slide valves or gate valves in your pipes with the variable frequency drive. And this is more if you're going to adjust it, and there are some control systems available that will let you do this. I know Samuel Jackson sells one. Another alternative is if you always have a slide valve closed and you're not using, you know, all the airflow that fan is providing, you should consider slowing the fan down. So just change the shifts to provide less airflow if it's not something you're adjusting. So another thing that's kind of a strategy that's we've seen is if you can eliminate fans, you'll eliminate some energy use. So gravity can be your friend. Now, having gravity-fed cylinder cleaners, it does reduce the cleaning efficiency, but in many cases, we have the capability to do more cleaning than we need. And there's also fewer emissions points. So that's one less worry there, and simplify things. Mechanical conveying on our trash systems is also helpful. So basically, we know that the industry's increased their efficiency. We've been decreasing electricity use, you know, about a half kilowatt hour per bale per year. And so it saves money. And this is kind of summary from, you know, based over our average ginning volumes, about 10 million each season. Now we're going to move on to dryer fuel. And I don't have the timer going, so I don't know how much time I've used up here. But we know a lot of gens, you know, have the big, you know, 5,000-gallon propane tank. You know, that's a 2-3-inch gas line. So we're using some fuel, or we certainly have the capability to use a lot of fuel. And a bigger issue is really, even though it's not as big a percentage of the cost as electricity, it can be very volatile. And we saw lately propane's been fairly cheap, but several years back it really increased in a short period of time. And so it was a pretty significant cost. And because it's very unpredictable, there's a lot of risk there. So what we can do to reduce that is going to be useful as well. So generally here, putting a gas meter in takes a little bit of effort, and we can't generally stop a gen to do that. So we generally just measure our airflow in terms of our air velocity, get our pipe size, and then we measure the temperature change when a burner's on. So from that, we can calculate fuel used. So we're just installing some of these systems. Basically, we made these so we could go into a gen, spend about an hour, and then put it in our equipment up, measure it for a little while, and then go on to the next gen. And we use these little data loggers. So again, it's kind of summarizing the same thing. Collecting some samples for moisture content. And you'll notice we do follow safe practices there, as that's right above that rotary valve. So he's got a little scoop there to get some samples. And we follow standard oven drying. And you'll notice that's not actually the oven it specifies in the standard, but we did some work to show that that's a suitable way to do it. So, and now where the statistician, Kathy Yater, comes into this, there's a lot of variables involved. She ran a principal component analysis, and we worked a lot on the design with this. Really, our big differences were due to just weather and the conditions of the cotton coming in, and our facility design, mostly in terms of, you know, insulation and length of pipe, not in airflow use, not the drying system type. And we were in gens with all varieties, tower dryers, the various Sam Jackson models, jet dryers, etc. So now, I'm not saying there's not a difference, but just with the data we had, that really wasn't the key factor. Again, it's the same thing. You know, you want to operate at full capacity and minimize your downtime. So that's the key point here as well. So another thing with drying and with the push for greater quality, greater fiber length uniformity, we want to avoid unnecessary drying. Obviously, we do get some benefit to cleaning. Kind of the historical studies have shown a percent reduction in fiber moisture content gives you about a quarter of a leaf grade improvement. But if you're getting, you know, leaf grade, if you're getting 31 threes or 41 fours, you don't need to improve your leaf grade. So you don't need to dry it anymore for cleaning purposes. All you're doing at that point is wasting energy and damaging the fiber quality. And we've seen this. I know there was a Mississippi Lummis gin that we, you know, their philosophy was to really shoot for that just over a four leaf grade. And they did very minimal drying, and so they had, you know, good turnout, good fiber quality, and they didn't spend much on dryer fuel. And again, use the minimum air needed to convey. A lot of what you're heating is air. Your dryers are, the efficiency we measured is generally about 15 to 20%. So a lot of, in terms of the energy you're putting in, what's actually used to evaporate moisture. So a lot of it's going out in just hot air out the cyclone. Again, our efficiency, one thing we noticed, the two things. So insulate your pipe that has the high temperature air. That's between the burner and the mix point. As soon as the cotton mixes in, you start to evaporate moisture. The temperature drops pretty rapidly, and so your heat losses are much less. And shorten that pipe. The longer it is, the more heat you're going to lose. So those are the kind of two big design recommendations there. Some other things, you know, work with your cotton growers. Make sure your modules, they're making modules that are formed properly. If they're conventional modules, they're storing them properly, regardless of module type, to minimize any incoming moisture from wet weather. Also, harvest when it's dry. And this is, you know, kind of the classic one there, you know. There, you're, it's not the best place to store that module. So, you know, with a round cover, it's not floated away. It's not, the cotton hasn't, you know, the module's still intact, but it's going to be a problem to gin. So, again, you know, that's Paul's affiliation there. And if there's any questions, I don't know if we have any more presentations or not, but.
We got one more.
Okay.
We got time if anyone's got a question.
All right.